So good evening, everyone. So again, my name is Anushka. I'm your visiting Dharma teacher from San Francisco. And I think because I came here, the weather has actually swapped, and apparently it's raining in San Francisco right now, which we need a lot because we've had a big drought there the last number of months. So the title of the talk today is about the radical path of mind training. So I want to tell you a little bit about what I mean by that, which may be just a reframing on something that you already understand. And I'll tell you a little bit about myself and how I came to this kind of practice. And we'll have time in the end for some questions and things like that. So can everyone hear me okay? Okay. If you cannot, you can wave and I'll do something with the mics. So I think in our society, we have a good understanding about physical training, you know, physical training of the body. So there's a general understanding of physical health, of exercise, of the possibility of training your body for physical fitness, for fun, for athletics, as a competitive activity, and as a general way to support well-being. So for myself, I was involved in sports from a pretty young age. I grew up on the East Coast, and so I played East Coast sports like field hockey and lacrosse that I'm not sure if they have as popular, much popularity out here. And got very engaged in them, middle school, high school, very competitively. And actually, through the sports, gained a lot of benefits from physical fitness and confidence, and became quite competitive with them. And I started going to Olympic development camp, like became a very serious athlete. And through the experience of playing sports also, I had many different experiences that could be considered like unusual spiritual experiences, which people describe sometimes in playing sports or athletics through the body, like experiences of flow. You feel completely connected to what's happening, kind of unified in the field of movement. In some sports is described, and my experience was of, you know, feeling like the ball was hanging there and there's only one thing that can happen, and you're fully synchronized in this movement. So that's some coming together of mind and body in that time too. And also I had the beginnings of the experience of explicit mind training then. So I remember playing competitive sports and sometimes getting kind of worked up about it. And my dad actually gave me the advice, you know, if you get nervous before a game, you could just sit quietly in the locker room and just follow your breath a little bit. You put your attention on your breath, breathing in and out, and that can help you to calm down and to get ready for the game. So it was good advice. I'm still doing that like 30 years later now. You know? But so these aspects of mental training are something that are connected to physical training, but that actually are much less well-known, I would say, and understood in the Western culture at the moment. So as I went on, I was playing competitive sports, and then I got interested in other aspects of the world and of the way things worked and about suffering and about the mind. And then I started studying Buddhism, reading about Buddhism, and actually wanted to do more than just study it intellectually. So I wanted to actually experience this. So then I got engaged in meditation practice, which I would call a form of mind training, really. So we've all done this form of mind training today, this period before the talk. And it was so compelling to me that it actually loosened a lot of my ambition from physical activity, you know, from sports and things, and I got really focused on wanting to train the mind and understand what's possible there. So when I finished college, I went on to just do meditation for about 3 years in some different monasteries and retreat centers and learn about all these different trainings that were possible of the mind, of cultivating the mind. And then continued that basically all of my adult life in different ways. And it's really interesting to me now, you know, the shape of the physical body is something that we understand a lot in the West and in fact glorify. You know, there's a certain adoration of the physical fitness of the body. And we see a lot of pictures of that, and there's a lot of admiration for people who are physically fit. It's actually possible to understand the shape of the mind in some ways. So actually, like, everyone has certain characteristics of mind, you know, certain characteristics and qualities of mind, you could say. It's not visible explicitly in the same way in the visual field, although it is visible in the way that we behave towards each other, you know, towards ourselves and towards each other. So it's this that I want to talk about a little bit, this possibility of understanding the qualities and characteristics of the mind in the same way that we do the body, and the possibility of actually training and cultivating the mind the same way that we consider cultivating the body. So we know this even from general experience about ourselves, about different people. You can see this even in small children. So if you encounter babies or little kids, and I've had several friends lately who've had babies in the last 6 months or so, and the babies do seem to have different temperaments, you know, and it's not really explainable by anything. It isn't necessarily related to this or that of a parent. But, you know, some babies seem to be, like, very sensitive and cry a lot. Some babies seem, like, extremely even keel, and, you know, different things don't bother them that much. Some babies seem very physically active. Some babies are very calm. You know, all different aspects of babies. And then as they get a little bit older, you can see this even more. Even pre-speech, how they respond to things. So some little kids, like, seem to have a bad temper. You know, some little kids seem to have a big sense of humor. Right? There are all these different characteristics and qualities of mind that emerge, you know, that we can see through interacting with and observing, you know, even very small children. So we observe this about people, and sometimes we take this as fixed. It's like, oh, that person's like that, I'm like that, you're like that. Right? Oh, this guy, he's like angry type, or this one's like that. And, you know. But what if it's actually possible to work with the characteristics of mind? You know, to actually work with and cultivate that in the same way that we might work with our body. So we might not all start from the same place, same as with the physical body, but the possibility is there of actually training, of developing, to whatever extent that we are interested in and is possible, it's possible for all of us to work with the mind in this way too. So a couple questions that might come to mind. So what does this mean? Like, what is mental fitness? You know what physical fitness is, but what is mental fitness? What is my own state of fitness at the moment, and how do I know that? And then what is the means of training? Like, what is the training that's actually possible? So this kind of thing was explored and talked about actually thousands of years ago. So even though at this moment we're in a space of great technological innovation and development and change, actually 2,600 years ago there was a time of great spiritual innovation and change in many different parts of the world, in fact. So it was a time when the Buddha lived, when Lao Tzu lived, when Socrates lived. There was a lot of, like, fomenting of thought about the mind during this time. And the interesting thing, too, is that all of this is actually also applicable to us now. So despite the fact that we might have smartphones and Wi-Fi and whatever, you know, the mind of the human being is basically essentially the same. And the possibilities for cultivation are the same. So the Buddha said, whatever you think and ponder upon, this will become the inclination of your mind. So it makes sense. Whatever you think and ponder upon, this will become the inclination of the mind. In some ways, it's like, in a basic way, let's say, the inclination of your physical body. So you might have noticed sometimes if you're walking somewhere, and then you go somewhere where there's an escalator, maybe in a shopping mall, and sometimes your head's at the same level as someone's feet, and you can notice the way that their shoes seem to be worn down. So sometimes people's shoes are worn down a lot on the inside. Sometimes their shoes are worn down a lot on the outside. And many times people don't even notice the way that their shoes are worn down. You can go check this out after the talk, your own shoes, and see, right? Am I an inside wearer, outside wearer? And basically, it works like, you know, if you tend to wear your shoes on the inside, that side tends to wear down. And then the more and more like that, the shoes get more and more slanted. So that actually kind of continues that wearing, right? So you can see shoes or the way people walk that are really, they seem quite exaggerated because of that inclination, you know, of the body and of wearing down of the shoes. And it's actually true of the mind, too. Right? This is actually true of the mind. Like, the inclination of the mind tends to, like, wear those grooves into our mind, and that is what arises more and more. So all of these different characteristics that I mentioned, these different qualities of mind or mind states, are ones that maybe happen to occur frequently for some of us, of anger, of kindness, of compassion, and so on. So the first step is actually just to tune in to what is it that is going on in the mind. You're getting to know your mind. So if you get up in the morning, you might check out yourself in the mirror, you see your physical body, and you're like, oh, I should, you know, work out these muscles more, and, you know, oh, I didn't clean my face properly here, and stuff like that. So looking in the mirror, seeing the state of the physical body. And you wouldn't want to leave the house if you can help it with, like, one shirt tail hanging out, or your hair sticking up, or something like that. So you look at that, right, you check it out. So what's the equivalent of how we can check out the mind? So actually, mindfulness. So developing a sense of awareness. Developing a sense of awareness and understanding how to become open, how to become aware of what's arising in the mind, in the states of mind, in the intentions. So this can include both being able to see the states of mind and intentions in larger ways of anger, of excitement, of generosity, of jealousy, and so on. And then also, even in a more subtle way, understanding qualities of mind. So qualities of mind like concentration, you know, like mindfulness itself, like equanimity. And these are also all qualities of mind that can be cultivated. So in terms of physical activity, there's a lot of different kinds of exercise that you can do. And actually, different kinds of exercise tend to cultivate different aspects of physical fitness. So I saw recently a show where they were showing a baseball player doing rehab after having had an injury. And he was doing all kinds of different physical exercises. Like, some were adding to his flexibility, some were adding to his quickness, some were like stamina exercises. And if you've ever gotten into physical training, you know, there's different ways that you could train. So I've done a number of different sports over that time since, I'll continue with my athletic biography for you. But now more recently, like, I've been doing swimming a fair amount. And then also I joined recently a softball team. So swimming is interesting. It's a full body sport. So I started to do swimming, and I've learned swimming a long time ago in kind of a basic way. But I never could do this sport, the butterfly, as a stroke. You know, I didn't learn that when I was little. But I got interested in that a couple years ago. So both to make it interesting, and I was like, I see people doing that. It's such a beautiful stroke. You know, I wonder if I could learn how to do that. So I turned to the internet and to videos. And actually started watching different videos about these strokes. And it broke it down with the butterfly. So first the arms are like this, and you practice that. And then you practice this dolphin kick like this. And then you try putting it together. And then you have to be able to breathe also, you know. It's also very helpful, right? So I started doing this. You know, first you do one arm, then you do the other arm, then both arms. And little by little, I was able to put together the stroke. And it required a lot of different things. It required a certain strength. Like, it requires a lot of pectoral strength to be able to pull your body out of the water like that. And then it requires a certain rhythm, you know, to be able to get the rhythm right of when to kick and when to breathe. But it was possible to do this, you know, little, by like pulling this together in this way. So similarly, even things that seem very difficult, you know, in terms of mental training, like, it's possible to sort of break it down. And using different exercise and aspects of mental training to be able to develop this, to be able to understand. But we need to develop a certain awareness of, like, what is the state of the mind now? You know, what is sort of the landscape look like of the mind? The first thing that can be hard, it can be hard to do because sometimes there are things that arise that we don't want to see. So sometimes there are things that don't fit in with our idea of who we are or of who we would like others to see us to be. So this is one of the aspects of practice that's really important, is being willing to be honest with yourself about what you see and really being willing to be courageous about what it is that's arising in your own mind and heart. Being willing to take feedback from people also. Because sometimes the way that we see these things is through our speech and actions, and sometimes friends of ours, or even non-friends, can give us feedback about ways that we speak and act, right? Which actually makes them our friends, really, if they can give us that feedback too. Sometimes we have giant blind spots about things, you know, about aspects of our own actions and the way that we speak, the way that we act. And it can be very challenging to look at. But this is actually the path of the, you could say, just like the physical warrior, of like the spiritual warrior, is being open to that, being open to see that as much as possible, you know, welcoming that in. So developing the state of mental fitness, you know, requires some kind of practice too. And this kind of practice, like learning many things, has to do with developing an ability to observe patterns, to see patterns, and to notice them more and more quickly. So I'll tell you a little bit about my softball life. So I just joined a team, and it's a novice softball team, which is good because I haven't really played softball much since about fourth grade. And it's a little bit, it's very humbling to take up a sport later in life, I'll tell you. I'm a decent hitter, just because that's like a very basic eye-hand coordination kind of cave person-like thing to do. But I don't really know how to throw very well, I have to say. Like, my throws sometimes go like a long, swooping throw like this, or, you know, they don't release at the right point or something. And I have friends who are playing on this team, and they've been playing in high school and college, so it's very natural to them to be able to throw really well. You know, they just do it like very fluid, very easily. And this is also a sign where someone who can do something, but they can't necessarily teach you how to do something, right? It's different to be able to do something versus to be able to teach how to do something, because it actually comes very easily to them. But the way they got like that is just from practice, basically. So, you know, from the time they were little kids, they were like playing catch with their siblings or with their parents or something like that. So now come time to play softball and your adult life, like they've done it like 100,000 times. So it comes very naturally. Or another one is catching the ball. So there's an art to this too. So because I don't know how to throw very well, I get marooned out in distant outfield, like like Charlie Brown land, you know, way out, right? But occasionally a little action comes my way, like the ball gets hit there. And the first time, I did this kind of like staggering backwards, you know, with the mitt, and it went over the head and over the mitt. So I thought, there's gotta be a better way to do this than that. So then I watched I started paying attention when baseball games are on, and I saw like, oh, they actually stand ready like this, and then they turn sideways and run to get them. So I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So there's technique to this, right? Then the next time the ball came, I got in the right position, I put up the glove, the ball came to the glove, but then it bounced out. So then my friends told me, like, oh, you actually have to close the glove. You know, I thought it's like this giant hand, you just stick it there, like, you know. But you actually have to close the glove, and there's a little technique to this. So then also, like, I watched people, you know, baseball players, and even my friends who knew how to do this. And there's a sort of a certain drill. It's like, get in place, I can see them concentrating, they put up the glove, they catch, you know, it's like a certain series that they do. And they've practiced it. You know, they've practiced this, so this comes naturally in that case. So like, oh, okay. So, you know, when you start doing something new, you have to like break it down, like into it like that. So in some ways you could consider this like the practice that we do. So in this seated meditation practice, it's like developing awareness of what's happening in the mind and body system. You know, first of all, under as good conditions as possible. Meaning like no one is bugging you during this time. You don't have to do anything else complicated. Like just sit here and see, can I notice experience of the body? Can I experience and know an emotion? So if you can do that in practice, you know, then you're more likely to do it in the game, i.e. when you're like out in life having conversations, someone's cutting you off in traffic, stuff like that. So you'll be more likely to know when a state arises. When a state arises and then how to work with that. So as you've trained in how to work with that under better conditions, under calm, under practice conditions, then you'll be able to do it in different conditions of life, right? More complicated conditions. But there's something more, actually, than being able to train to be sort of a good athlete, a good physical specimen, and even to be able to train to be a good mental specimen. So the possibilities of training in this way, this kind of mental training, is actually about understanding what's really true. You know, so we cultivate these different qualities of mind and able to see into what's true about ourselves, about life, about this given moment. And part of what's there to understand in this understanding of the Dharma is about who we really are and the nature of what we will call reality. So the mental training allows us to understand, for example, you know, what is actually worth investing in? What can I actually take refuge in? What is actually reliable for me? And we can actually see what it is that we are taking refuge in. You know, what are we investing in? And what seems to be solid, safe, a place to go to? And is this something that will really work for us? So my favorite analogy about this is of the Dharma as truth, as nature, and as of an understanding of truth and nature that is something like what we can understand about the physical world. So this is like understanding the law of gravity. So the law of gravity is something that's observable about the physical world, and it's something that you don't understand when you're a baby. And you can see babies checking it out and experimenting with this as they go about their baby lives. So they're sitting there eating food in their high chairs, and then they start dropping things off the high chair, right? So, and watching it fall to the ground, right? And it's like, oh yeah, what if I did it on this side? You know, like, still falls, right? And then what if I'm not looking at it? You know, like that, like, still falls. So then after a while you get the hang of that and you understand like, oh, when I drop things off, they seem to go to the ground, right? And it actually doesn't matter, is someone running that? How does it work? You know, you basically just need to understand what's gonna happen there and then actually live in accordance with that. So by the time you're grown up, you understand, you know, if I wanna place this glass of water somewhere, if I place it in midair, it's not gonna end up very pretty, right? It's gonna, glass will break, the water will spray around, there's going to be a mess to clean up. So then, more likely if I place it on this table, that's a better idea. So similarly, there are these dimensions of the way things are, that everything in our experience is always changing, so that our physical bodies are always changing, that the experience of the mind is always changing, you know, that there's actually nothing that we can hold on to in our experience in this way. If nothing is actually permanent, everything is in flow, then it changes our relationship to experience, to ourself, to others. It also helps us to see that nothing is completely separate. You know, there's an interconnection between ourselves and others. And so then we act in accordance with that. So in this way, we can develop a sense of alignment, you know, develop a sense of alignment with the truth in the same way that we can develop an alignment with the law of gravity. And the more that we experience this alignment, the more that we are aligned, the more we can live a free life, a happy life, a life with less messes, less chaos, less suffering for ourselves and others. So in terms of mental fitness, I would say, you know, this is really the highest goal, is this complete alignment, you know, through understanding and cultivating the qualities of mind that allow us to open to this, which includes mindfulness, includes concentration. Understanding different states of mind that arise, and which of these are ones that are coming from this understanding. So this would be more wholesome states of mind, of generosity, of loving kindness, compassion, and noticing the states that arise that take us away from this, and that come from delusion, from a state of separation. So hatred, jealousy, revenge, like that. So now as I describe this analogy, you know, this mind training, for some people it might be helpful, and for some people it might be a little bit depressing, because you think like, oh, you know, I already feel guilty, I don't go to the gym enough, and I'm not happy with my physical state, so now it's like something else to get depressed about, you know, feel guilty about, I'm not doing enough mind training. So the intention is actually not that. My intention is actually to suggest that, you know, this is a field, basically, in which you're already playing. So just as in the physical body, you know, is a field in which you're already developing all the time, or not developing different muscles, we're actually always developing in the mental field. So whatever we say or do, whatever intention comes from that, we're cultivating that state of mind. You know, we're working out that revenge muscle. You know, we're working out that generosity muscle. We're actually cultivating that sense. We're planting those seeds. So it's not even about specifically, you know, going to the gym of the meditation cushion per se as the only way to develop that. I think it's more like an understanding that we're always cultivating something. This mental training is happening all the time. And most people don't know that. You know, they don't know that it's happening or that it's possible to actually have some intentional way of doing that. So now that might be depressing to you too, like, oh, now I have to pay attention all the time. It's like, first it was like guilty you go to the gym, and then it's like, oh, now all the time I have to be doing this, right? It seems impossible. So another suggestion of an attitude towards this is actually one of interest and even of play. So even with physical fitness, like at one point I had some injury in my knees, and I had to have an operation, and then I had to go through all this rehab and stuff. And at a certain point, there was a young person in my life who had sort of similar injury, but slightly less serious. And then they didn't have to go through rehab. And I asked their parents, like, how come they're not doing, you know, physical therapy and stuff like that? And they said, oh, with little kids, like, they just play. So, you know, they get off their crutches and they just go to the playground and they run around. And, like, they just, you know, their muscles get strengthened because they're trying to chase their friends and this and that, right? I was like, oh, wow, that would be so much more fun than like having to do this, like, you know, little things like this all the time. So I'd suggest to you that actually one attitude we can take towards this cultivation of the mind is just one of interest and play. You know, just being interested in the way the mind works. You know, being interested in how it plays out. Like having a sense of humor towards it, having a sense of interest. Because it's just happening anyway, you know. It's happening anyway, so just see how that happens. You know, in yourself, for others. You know, all of that. So mental training connected with physical training. And I've gotten more interested in this lately also because I'm also somewhat of a sports fan, and I understand your football team had some good luck this past year. And, but I watched the basketball, college basketball, and last year the Cal women's team did quite well, like kind of out of the blue, and made it to the Final Four. So a lot of my friends went to Cal, Berkeley, and started watching this. And then the last game that they were in, it seemed like they could win, and they didn't. basically. And you see this in so many cases. Actually, in the Winter Olympics, I watched the Winter Olympics, and there are people who have trained so much for their sport, they could do it perfectly in practice, but then come time for the actual event, and they can't do it. So what is it then? You know, there is the physical training, but really it's about the mind. Yeah. So I watched the Cal women's basketball team lose, sadly, in New Orleans in the Final Four, and I thought, if they had a meditation teacher, they would have won that game. So I can see this play out. You know, the mental influences the physical influences the mental. And I see this even in my own, novice softball training. So we went to the batting cages. That was the first time I went to batting cages, and like I was able to hit the ball really well. And then we went to the actual game, and I still could hit okay, but not as well as in the batting cages. And then one of my friends said, "Remember the batting cages." And then I remembered and was able to play much better. And we have a pitcher who has many ups and downs, but I know her favorite poem. She has this big connection to the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock. So when I see her doing badly from the outfield, I start yelling lines of this poem to her. It's one of my favorite parts of the game. Like, shall I park my hair behind? You know, and it kind of gets her in the zone and she's able to go forward, right? So the mental affects the physical affects the mental, and it can be like play. You know, there can be a way it can be fun if you start to understand how these things work. Like, it doesn't have to be dreary, it doesn't have to be terrible, it doesn't have to be some kind of, like, drudgery. You know? So the Buddha said, your mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is the forerunner of all things. So it behooves us to pay attention to this area of the mental training. So you know this already since you have come to meditation to some extent or another, but sometimes we forget, you know, many different times in our life. So it's helpful to have reminders like this. So I wish all of you well in your mental training. Thank you for your attention to the Dhamma. So we have some time for questions. If you have any questions or comments you want to make. The Seahawks meditate was the comment. Excellent. Yeah. So a question about how does that analogy work for this mental training for play? You know, she understands with physical training and, you know, watching kids play and they get muscles get strong and physically because it's like that. But how does that work for mental training? Right. I think it can work in a number of different ways, a variety of different ways. One is that there are these different techniques of meditation that you can use, you could say. And some are about intentionally cultivating certain states. And for those of you who are coming to the retreat this weekend, we will be doing some techniques that are about, like, intentional mental training in particular states. Right? So sometimes in the beginning of some trainings, it can seem like, okay, I'm doing something, like I'm learning how to do something. Kind of like, okay, I'm learning how to throw the ball, or I'm learning how to stand, catch. You know. So it can take a little bit of effort up front in some kinds of training. But then once you get that, it's like, it can be like play also. So that's one. Number two is just the attitude of investigation, I think is really the key one. So the attitude of curiosity and interest about what's happening in the mind. So that's really the one that is really helpful to aid the sense of play, I think. So just understanding that there's this whole field at work all the time of what's happening in the mind, when we're interacting with others, when we're by ourselves. And just being interested, being willing to be surprised, being open, I'd say some of the attitudes that help that is, for example, an attitude of humility. So not thinking like, oh, I already know. I know who I am. I know who you are. I know what you're going to say. I know how this is going to play out. So that's actually the enemy of play. Unless you can bring a sense of awareness to that too, then it gets folded in. So a sense of humility is helpful, a sense of openness is helpful with it. And then the sense of curiosity, investigation coupled with it too. Now all of those are also states of mind too, right? So already you're in mind training when you consider that. But it's actually possible to be interested, like at any time, you know, in what's happening with the mind. So you don't have to be directing it in some way necessarily, although that is one training to be done, but you can just be interested in that. So I'll give you an example. There are many different times during the day when you're not having to intellectually engage with something, probably. So even times when you're sitting at a traffic light or waiting for an elevator or waiting in line somewhere. So notice how you're spending your time in those moments. You know, it could be time that we're actually interested in, like, oh, what's the mind up to? You know, mental training. Like, where's the attention? And there's different kinds of training you can do about directing the attention to the body, about noticing what the states of mind are that arise. You know, so all of those moments can be interesting points of developing this mental training. So I have one teacher, for example, who is very interested in this continuity of mind, and before he became a monk, he worked in a clothing store. I think his family's like cloth store or something. And he said that he was so interested in this cultivation of the mind that he just did this whenever possible. So he'd have to deal with the customer and stuff, and then when he stopped that, he would pay attention to the mind until the next customer came. So it's sort of like there are all these different points at which, if you're interested, you can be engaged in this, you know, cultivating the mind like that. And I experienced this too during different times of my practice when I was doing certain practices or not. Like, for example, cultivation of metta, loving kindness practice. When I decided to develop that whenever possible. So when I was taking the train to work, you know, I'd wish metta to all the different people who would get on the train. When I was standing on the platform, I'd do metta like that. When I was walking on the street, lying down before going to bed. You know, there's actually, if interested, many different opportunities that we can use to cultivate the mind and pay attention. So, you know, you can take it as it comes, but it can be like play. It can become very interesting and fun to see this. So for example, even with this metta, you know, practicing on the train, it can become interesting if you're open to it. Like, noticing when it's hard to wish well to someone and when is it not. And if you're open to that, just allowing yourself to see that, to be interested in that, you know, to notice these patterns of mind that are already happening anyway, whether we acknowledge them or not, and which actually are ones that drive us, you know, and that affect our continued arising in our minds. So yeah, this kind of curiosity and fun aspect of it, of just seeing like, oh, what's here now? You know, is something that helps it a lot. Yeah.
Now, look at the students. There are ways of measuring progress, like how long it takes to run a distance. Could you suggest a metric?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, right? So it's like, what's the metric? Because it's easy to see athletic progress, like goals or runs or how fast you can run a certain amount and things like that. And it seems a little bit more nebulous in this whole mind training thing. So in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. Like, there could be certain basic functions that you could look at. So one is amount of suffering, right? I mean, baseline, right? So amount of suffering, like dukkha, as in suffering, that you experience, and then, this is very important, that you seem to be causing for others also. Both metrics. It's good to have both columns as things that you pay attention to, right? Because if you're like, I'm okay, but you seem to be really causing a lot of stress for other people, it's good to pay attention and see what's happening. I mean, actually, there are other ones for particular different qualities of mind, too. For example, concentration. Right? So concentration and collectedness is actually a quality of mind that you can cultivate, and that you can, to some extent, see how developed that is. So at higher levels, you can do that through developing certain jhanic states, like certain deeper states of mind that do have certain characteristics that, interestingly, have been documented over thousands of years. So it's actually possible to observe that. But even in a smaller way, if you want to develop concentration, if you're using that as something that you're trying to train in, for example, you could notice, for example, like, okay, how many breaths can I be with? Not in a gripping way, but like be with before the attention wanders. And you could actually count that, right? Now that shouldn't be the only metric, right, for your whole practice, but that is something that does help you understand what level of concentration could be there in one way, right? Now that's one way of sort of pinpointed concentration, but also it's possible for there to be a more expansive concentration, right? Or sort of collectedness, but in a wide angle kind of way too. So with different characteristics, it's possible to see this, even with the development of metta, right? So this sense of loving kindness. So you could see like when that arises naturally, what is the opposite of that? So the opposite could be seen as an aversion or hatred, right? And notice when that arises. Now, it's hard if you have like a win-lose mentality, because then you think like, oh, I'm losing if I notice more hatred. But actually, with mindfulness, you're winning if you notice anything. So it's good, like noticing anything is good. So when you notice more aversion, it's actually helpful to be cheered up by that, because it was there anyway, right? You just were not paying attention to it. So those are a couple of those. So it may be not as like sort of numerical all the time, but there are ways in the field of the mind to understand the mind too, and sort of where our development is. There are also other ways, sort of, I think, more anecdotally to notice. You know, for example, even the ability to have balance, equanimity. So here's one, for example, and you probably have experienced this in your life, where sometimes there's something that happens and it knocks you off balance. But then after a while, after you gain some experience, it's not such a big deal anymore, right? So you've developed some skill with that, some ability, it's okay. This may be analogous to like getting the fly ball catch. Like the catches that I dropped, probably to most of my experienced colleagues, would have been like easy outs. So for example, I remember the first time I had a flat tire in my car when I was a teenager, and it made me very like nervous and like, oh no, what am I gonna do? And how am I gonna deal with this? And right. Does anyone here remember their first flat tire? Yeah. But for most of us, if you continue to drive, that was not your only flat tire. Like it's sort of inevitable as you drive around that you're gonna get a nail here. And after a while, it just doesn't have to freak you out as much. It's like, oh, okay, I see what happened. Let's take it to there, go deal with it. So you can start to notice, you know, your level of balance that can happen even with different things that happen in your life. And it can be really encouraging to notice, like, oh, things that used to throw me off, like actually there's more of a development of centeredness with that. Right? I understand things better. There's more of a wisdom there, really, that informs it. And it could be anything, like when things break, like how am I with that? Like how am I with that thing breaking? You know, am I shocked and dismayed as if I thought that thing was going to last forever? You know? Or is it just like, oh, okay, that's too bad it broke, but you can clean it up and, you know, relatively centered way move on. Yeah, so the question is, she'd been on retreats and her understanding was that for the walking meditation, you have to do it really, really slowly. So you really slow it down so you're like hardly moving. And when I'm doing these physical activities like swimming, is there one way which I'm doing it that it's like meditating too? So I would say, you know, even with walking meditation, there's actually many different techniques of that. So some techniques that are slow it down ones are more orienting you towards a greater amount of detail, of concentration and collectedness. But it also is possible to do walking meditation quite fast. In that case, you're usually just aware of less detail, but just the sense of the body moving or a broader sense of motion that's happening. So it's really possible to cultivate mindfulness at any speed, and I think it's helpful to recognize that. You might get a different level of detail, but still you're cultivating that quality of being present, right? And noticing when you're not present and coming back. So like that, yeah, it's totally possible when swimming is a really good one, you know, to just feel the body in motion as you're swimming, and to be connected to that. And then if you're deciding to direct the attention to that, then noticing when the attention has gone elsewhere and bringing it back again. Or you can just be aware of what's happening both in the body and in the mind in that way. You know? So the arising of thought doesn't have to be outside of mindfulness too. It's possible to be aware of thought itself too. So yeah, it's completely possible to be cultivating the mind in that too, I would say. And it's fun. So there's another, like, how do you play with it? Is like, oh, what does that mean? You know, in whatever the activity that I do, physical activity, how is it possible to make this both physical training but also mental training at the same time? So that's kind of an interesting one to see. So for me, for example, with the softball, I was noticing, like, okay, so I'm hanging out in the outfield there. What is the correct kind of attitude or position of readiness? And I was noticing it really is that kind of like, you don't want to be extremely tense, you know, you can't be too tight, but you also can't be too, like, spaced out, you know. So it really is that sort of relaxed and alert thing. You have to be ready to go, but you have to be a little bit loose, because you don't know which side is going to come, this side, that side, things like that. So just from being interested in the mind and these different qualities, it's possible to see them being applied to, like, whatever it is that you do in any possible way. Another of my leisure activities is doing karaoke, which I also feel like can be a spiritual practice, but I'll save that for the next time that I come. That's a different talk. Okay, okay, someone over here, yeah. Yeah, so she's describing her experience and that trying to relate this to her own experience, and she's saying that sometimes she would feel herself on a mental hamster wheel, like spinning, worrying about things. And it sounded like it felt hard to get off of it those times, and it was just spinning. Yeah, there was no obsession happening. And then that's sometimes she would be biking, so in a different kind of wheel. But in the physical wheels right. turning, so through the physical wheels turning, she would be connected with the body, and the mind wouldn't be spinning as much.
Right.
Yeah. So because you have to direct your attention to something else, then the mind would be less. There seemed to be less attention going to this mental worrying and stuff. Like that. Yeah, I think a lot of people have that experience, and I think that's one reason why a lot of people do exercise too. You know, is that it connects them to the physical body in a way that takes them out of their usual frame of mind in some ways. There are different, you know, more nuanced techniques in the mental training of practice. So for example, with the mental spinning kind of thing, like one technical thing to do with that would be, usually we're caught in these wheels of thinking and we're completely caught in the content of thinking. Like, oh, should I do this? Should I do that? What's going to happen? So that we could call worrying. So one way to bring mindfulness and the training to that is When there's any repetitive strain of thought like that, it usually is being fueled by some kind of emotional fuel under that, like basically an energetic storm that's going on. So one technique that can be used is actually to drop the attention to being aware of that energy. And I'm motioning my hands here because oftentimes it's in the heart, in the belly, right? So the spinning is going on with the thoughts, you know, and you don't need to block it out, you don't need to stop it, but just shift the focus in some way to experiencing directly in the body, in the heart, you know, what it feels like with that energetic storm moving through, right? So in that way, you're just with the heat or the tingling or the this or that, you know, be with that. And noticing the impermanence of that too. So noticing how everything is changing as it's moving through, right? And being balanced with that. So neither pushing it away nor grabbing onto it. So that's actually a practice that's kind of like, if you don't have a bicycle handy, you know, you can try working with it in that way. And then that can often shift your relationship to that, yeah, to that pattern, to that content. That also can help you to see that. So it's helpful that you're able to describe it later as a hamster wheel. Sometimes you can also get the larger sense just of that and energy of that too. Like, oh, this is hamster wheel. And trying not to glom onto the thoughts of it, but just feeling like, oh, spinning. So in that way, that just shifts your relationship from being completely identified with and being caught in those thoughts, right, to a shift to observing, knowing it as an arising, as a temporary arising that is not you and that doesn't have to be, you know, have that relationship of being caught in. Yeah. Yeah. So that's your mental training bicycle I'm giving you one.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think that's another helpful one to actually the question that the other gentleman asked about, you know, understanding like progress on the scoreboard or something, right? So there is that both the belief in the arising of self can loosen, and also even the frequency and solidity of the arising itself can decrease, right? So both those are also helpful markers of that. Now, both of those are coupled with, they're actually not separate from the suffering that you yourself experience and that you cause others, right? So even in this whole, you know, athletic biography that I described to you, like along that way, for me, there definitely has been different times in which, for example, even the identification as an athlete, you know, and then as someone who is good at something or who can win, you know, it can cause a lot of suffering if you're very tightly tied to that. And especially in sports, you know, where there's like ups and downs. You know, so, you know, your football team might win one year, but, you know, the next year, it's just anyone's guess what's going to happen, you know? So, so, you know, you can't be too attached to certain outcomes. It will cause a lot of suffering, you know. Just as an example, right? Actually, you know, I'll tell you, my softball team, so I tell you, we're actually in the novice division, in the D division, and we were not doing very well, you know, in this softball league. So we were like last time, a couple weeks ago, we were like second to last in place. And I told my friends that, and I was like, you know, so, you know, I mean, it can't get much worse. And they were like, yes, it can. You can drop the last place. You know? And then the week after that, we did in fact drop the last place. You know? But actually, for me, because I don't have some identity as a softball player, I'm actually not suffering from that because I'm like, I'm new. I don't know, you know. But I can see that for some of my friends, even though, you know, it's like the D division of the softball league, who had more of an identity as a softball player, like because they were good in college or this or that, that they're suffering much more from it. Like they actually care much more. And it causes them more distress in some way. And even that, you know, the mental patterns, like it's actually very interesting to see that the mental patterns that come out, So some people would come out and just be like very intense about this, and I was sort of surprised. I was like, I thought this was a game you play at picnics. Like, I thought this was like for fun, you know? Like, we're in the D division of this alpha league. Like, you know, getting very aggro and like yelling about it. But it's just sort of patterns of conditioning that is probably like how their coach yelled at them, and then they're just like playing that out, you know? So there again is like the mental training, you know? And when we're not bringing mindfulness to our experience, we're just playing out conditioning. And it's like a grab bag what that conditioning is going to be, you know? It really is. Like, sometimes it's going to be great, and sometimes it's going to be not so great. So this is how also we can pay attention. So, you know, keeping score sort of thing. Another helpful guideline is like, oh, how much do we do things or say things that we regret later? You know? And where does that come from? Where do those states come from when we do? You know? The precepts are helpful things to tune into. You know, also according to doing things that we later regret. So when do we lie or exaggerate things? And like, why does that happen? Like, what's going on? So there again, like getting interested, you know, it's like, wow, why did I say that? Right? Like, why did I make that up? You know? Like, it's just interesting if you can tune into that. Then it does become like play. It's like, oh, who is this? Like, what's this pattern emerging, right? So yeah, being interested in that sense of self as it's arising, and really even just being able to see through it. Because then if there can develop this attachment, if you're, you know, if you get some little dharma under your belt, you're like, oh, sense of self is fictitious. I don't really need to, you know, I'm going to see through that. So then that's another thing to start denying when you see it arising, like, oh, I don't see that. Or to be very attached to not having a sense of self arising, you know, so, or something. So there's many different ways in which delusion can manifest. So you have to keep an eye out. And there too, it's good to like have a sense of humor and a sense of play with it, because yeah, it's all just playing out in some way too, you know. Yeah. Yeah, so she's describing the trajectory of a football fan, basically. One trajectory of you know, noticing being during the Super Bowl win, being sort of hesitant to get too excited about it, but then deciding to let herself feel that joy, and then experiencing an ability to really feel the joy and go through that cycle of it being there for a couple weeks, you said, right? And then it sort of dissipates, and then it was okay when it left too. So yeah, we can actually fully enjoy things if we're in that centered place too, you know. So if it's not leaning forward and grasping or something, because many sports fans actually do experience a sense of loss when the season's over, you know. Like there's a sense of it can be like a sense of addiction to that, like the thrill of the cycle, whether it's win or loss. And sometimes when it's gone, it's like, oh, there's nothing, you know. And then you have to find the next sport to get on board with. So it's good to see, to observe that, yeah, it's possible to actually experience joy, enjoy something, you know, really fully and purely without attachment to it. Right? And then also it's good to be honest with yourself. I'm not saying this for you, but for people in general, you know, when there is a little bit of attachment, you know, when that arises. Because we're all really like very mixed bags in them. So there can be this arising of identity, or, you know, a little bit of a sense of leaning for something, or, you know, You'll see when the next season how really unattached you are. We'll see. No, it's good. But thank you for sharing that. We have mudita for your pure joy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a really good question. Okay, so a question I had talked in the beginning about temperament of like babies and little kids, and the implication was that is it possible to actually change temperament in that way? So that was sort of one question. And then an understanding like with physical training, you can become aware of how strong you are, but then just becoming aware of it is not actually changing it. So there's different other things that you do to develop that strength. So there's an understanding about like, well, what is mindfulness, this relationship of mindfulness to this, like how does that happen if it's possible to develop some changing of temperament or something like that, right? So yeah, both really good questions, I would say. I mean, one is for even physical training, like, so let's take physical training. You know, I was talking in sort of general terms with it, and you could say that everyone, no matter who, could benefit from physical training. And everyone could probably get somewhat stronger than they are now. But how much stronger is not the same for everyone, to some extent, right? So similarly, like with temper, like people sort of start at different places, so to speak, you know, with like a mixed bag, you know, a different bag of patterns that tend to arise. And it's, I don't want to say it's like, it's kind of a delicate balance, like it's not like, oh, you need to change your personality, that's what this is about in terms of personality. But the possibilities of this path are about the uprooting of certain unwholesome tendencies of mind that otherwise are there and which are the cause for our suffering and other people's suffering. So that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, when we say temperament, it means different things. So like, for example, some people like are really interested in, naturally drawn to animals or something like that, or, you know. So it's not really about that kind of thing, like what you're interested in some ways. But there is something about the arising of different mind states, particularly unwholesome ones, that it is possible through not just mindfulness, but actually the whole path, I would say, to shift that in the mind. Right? So then the question is, how does it work? Right? That was your question a little bit too. Like, how does that work? So mindfulness has become like a bit of a shorthand for a whole variety of different aspects of mental training. And it's gained a lot of popularity, I think, in our society now. And, you know, it's good that people have some handle on this factor, which is the lead factor and a very important factor in mental training. But actually, there are a variety of other ones that fall below that. So even when you're sitting and, quote unquote, practicing mindfulness, say, of the breath, actually, there's a whole lot of different factors that are being cultivated. So I'll describe a few of them, for example. So say you decide, like, I'm going to sit here for half an hour and try to be aware of what arises. And I'm gonna try and direct the attention to the breath as the main thing. So in directing the attention to the breath, then you're actually cultivating factors like concentration, collectedness, as well as a certain amount of mindfulness. Through taking that intention, like, okay, I'm gonna sit here and then maybe experience comes up of like, I'm gonna itch, but then you're like, okay, the intention was to sit there, notice the itch. Then you're actually developing both mindfulness, concentration, also you could say equanimity, so a sense of balance, and being able to be there with something that you otherwise would react to. You're also developing the ability to be curious and to investigate. That's also a quality of mind. So many different qualities of mind are being cultivated at the same time, even when we say, like, oh, I'm doing mindfulness practice. And so some of you who are know about sort of Buddhism stuff can hear that I was running through several of the factors of enlightenment in that, right? So that's all being cultivated during our practice. And also I would say, you know, it's the whole path is that of mental training and cultivation. So very specifically the aspects of mindfulness, concentration, meditation per se, but actually all of the aspects of the Eightfold Path contribute to that. You know, and that includes paying attention to our conduct, and you know, how we live in the world, you know, many different aspects. So in some ways, like if you ask the question like, oh, so how does physical fitness happen? I mean, it could say like, oh, you lift these weights. And then there would be another sort of scientific explanation that would be like, as you lift the weights, you make micro tears. And then as the, you know, you take in proteins, that builds up, right? I'm like a little winging it on the explanation of this, but it's something like that, right? I sort of remember this. Then the tears, they heal. Anyway, you get stronger, the muscles get bigger, right? So something like that. So it's interesting, like, oh, so how does that work with the mental thing, right? So you actually can describe, and there are actually descriptions of mental factors and how they play out together, right, in different ways, which is quite fascinating in the, like, maps of the mind, you know, and in this way, like Buddha was a genius. Like he actually was able to map these things in all these different ways that have not been described really by anyone else. So, yeah, that's sort of a shorthand explanation. Is that helpful? Yeah. So, okay, way in the back.
My question was about
teamwork. Teamwork, yeah. So the question is about dealing with teamwork and the flux of different characteristics. Can you give me an example? Because I'm not quite sure that I understood your question. Okay. It sounded like it has something to do with you know, what I was suggesting about being able to pay attention and be really honest about things, and that other people might notice something about you that you don't notice. Is it something along those lines? I mean, I guess one perspective on that is that in this realm, it's better to know the truth. It's better to know the truth about yourself, about others, about the way things work. So even if it's not what everyone thinks about you, and that actually, you know, if we say team player as like maybe in a bigger picture, it's like someone, you know, like you could say Bodhisattva is the ultimate team player, maybe, right? Like, you know, someone who lives in order to with kindness, with compassion, with like goodwill for other people, who's doing things for themselves and others, who understands themselves as part of the whole, right, is like the ultimate team player. And to really play on a team, like you have to be able to do that, right? It's like some flow between knowing when you're the best one to take the shot or when you should pass to someone else and let them make the shot, something like that. This is like, now I'm switching to basketball, soccer. Right, like, so it's like, oh, and not doing that, you'll be able to do that with wisdom, actually, with clarity, and not just like, I want the glory now, or I'm afraid to take the shot, you know? So it's like, actually the intentions of seeing clearly and not from a place of like egoic, either egoic fear or egoic like glory. So in that way, it's kind of the same just in regular life, too. Like, when is it possible for us to be there without that sense of, you know, egoic fear or glory driving us? You know, then we can feel into what's the appropriate thing to do in this situation. And hopefully to have that come then from these more wholesome states that I described. You know, and the training is beautiful because it both is, it's like upwardly spiraling, too. You know, the more that we are able to invest in that, to connect with that, to plant those seeds, then the more that that tends to naturally happen. So it's a very can be a very positive trajectory in that way too. All right, so I think we've come to near the end of our time.